CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins. Like I wrote back saying you didn't even have to put A24 no. in the trailer because you know it's A24.
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
Today we're doing a mini pod.
Patelli pod.
Okay, sure, why not? Of The Green Knight. This movie didn't set the world on fire at the box office. It made $6.7 million over the weekend. But I was in a packed house when I watched it.
Me too. And honestly, I don't know. We're never going to know because of theater still not open and stuff. But I don't know how much this would have made. I feel like $6-7 million's not bad for this movie, but I don't know. But I didn't actually look at the budget, so
yeah, same here. I mean, it looks like a huge budget the way it looks, but I mean, they did. I don't know if how much all the actors cost or anything.
It says
like
$15 million on Wikipedia, so if you want to trust that, but that. I mean, it seems like they spent more than that, but maybe that's all they spent. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But we wanted to mini-pod this one because it was getting a lot of great reviews heading into its release. And it definitely struck interest in me earlier in the year when I first saw the trailer for it. And I, at first when I was watching it, I was like, okay, that looks pretty cool. But it just seems like a movie that's going to just be dead on arrival and not many people will talk about it. And then it suddenly became one of the biggest, movies people were talking about. So, did you ever read, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight?
Yeah. Okay. That's one thing I wanted to ask. Is it Gawain? I meant to look that up before I even got on here.
An article I read seems to believe that no one knows how that's supposed to be pronounced. And even in the movie itself, it is pronounced several different ways.
Yeah. That was the problem I was having, but I like Gawain. That's what I would call it if I saw it, So, no, I don't think so. I've never been much of a King Arthur, person. I've seen a lot of the movies, but I don't think I've really read anything. It's possible we read this poem in school, but if we did, I don't remember it. So
I did believe it was senior year high school. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if it was that or not, but I don't remember too much about it. I know that I know that certain things did feel different from what I remembered from it. But they have, we've definitely, I think David Lowery, who's the writer and director of this, he definitely changed a lot of things in this. So let's get into in the movie, the visuals are amazing. Our actors are amazing. I do feel like David Lowery sort of set out to make a certain kind of movie. And I think he succeeded in making that movie that, it feels like a true vision on the screen. There are going to be some things. This is what sort of knocks it down for you. It's one of those movies where there's so many different interpretations of what you see on the screen. And, is this really happening? Is this, those type of things I don't think that I said that wrong. It makes it go down in your eyes, but it's not, you don't have a complete sense of, I don't feel like I have a complete sense of what this movie really is until I've seen it five times.
Probably. Yeah. There's a scene early on where Gawain, played by Dev Patel, who, God, talk about that dude, by the way, that dude is just, he's a movie star. It's just interesting to think back to Slumdog Millionaire, and he hasn't even really done that many movies since then. He's I don't know if he's either if it's that he's not getting offered or if he's just choosing really well, but he did Lion a few years ago, which was pretty fantastic. And He's really good in this, and
he's in the newsroom, which was pretty good. Yeah,
yeah, no, he's always he's picking well, whatever he's doing. But there's a scene early on with him and King Arthur because he's King Arthur's nephew. I assume that's the case in the poem. I don't know, but we find out in this he's King Arthur's nephew. King Arthur, by the way, played by Sean Harris, who is quickly becoming a favorite of mine, especially after this and the last couple Mission Impossible movies. But there's a scene where Sean Harris, he asked, they're at a, it's a Christmas banquet. You know, Gawain is just sitting out amongst everybody else. And King Arthur actually asks him to come up there and sit with them. Mm-hmm. And he seems really surprised. And then at one point, King Arthur, you know, tells him that he wants to hear a story. And like, you know, from that point, that, you know, that's when the Green Knight comes in and all that stuff. So, I mean, I you could interpret it that, you know, we become part of that audience as well, you know. Yeah. You know, David Lowry's about to tell us a story. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. And then obviously we'll talk about it more in spoilers, but there is that, like, I think you could interpret, I feel like I know what the ending's trying to say, but I'm sure you could interpret it however you want. I mean, the movie itself feels like a poem, right? And I mean, and like a poem, you know, I think different people are going to have different interpretations of it. I mean, I think that's purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also pretty straightforward. Like, it doesn't feel like it's just trying to be abstract for the sake of being abstract. I mean, you can follow definitely the A to B plot points, you know, pretty well. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of, you know, weird, crazy shit that'll make you think you took an edible before you started watching it. You know, talking and foxes and...
I mean, yeah. I mean, if I have the chance to watch this after eating an edible, I will. I will do that. So yeah, I really like this movie.
Me too.
It's one of those just unique kind of films, kind of experiences. And when we get into spoilers, I'll talk about what I really, really like about it. But in vague terms, I'll say I really like the plot of this movie. Mm-hmm. I really like what I feel like the message was to me watching this movie. And it's just gorgeous to look at, and it seems so self-assured. This is, you know, David Lowry did A Ghost Story, which I feel like has mixed reviews from what I've mm-hmm. I loved Ghost Story.
Me too.
I haven't seen Old Man and the Gun.
It's pretty good. It's good. Robert Redford gives a really nice performance. If that is his last performance, I mean, you know, it's worth seeing for that. But it's definitely not anything on the level of Ghost Story.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the remake of Pete's Dragon.
I haven't either.
But from what I've seen, you know, this guy seems to know what he wants when he's able to, I don't know if it's that auteur type of thing where he's able to do his thing. So let's give a round of grades and we'll get into the spoilers. I'm gonna give this an A-, and probably it'll be higher once I watch it a few more times.
Yeah, I'm in the exact same boat. I'm definitely giving it an A-. I like it for all the reasons you did. I think the themes of this movie are really interesting. I like how recently there was like an article about like, you know, this movie that Schwarzenegger was supposed to do back in the 90s or whatever, called Crusade, where it was mm-hmm. just going to be like this insane action epic in medieval times. And, you know, and that's typically what a lot of these movies are, is, you know, a lot of these, even movies like, you know, Excalibur and stuff. I mean, there's always a lot of machoism and there's a lot of questing and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And this movie kind of, I don't know if it fights against it, but it definitely, like I was explaining, like that moment early on where, you know, King Arthur's just asking him to tell him a story. I mean, that's a type of moment you never get in these movies. So I kind of like that this movie just offered a whole different perspective on this. I can also see why that would maybe turn people off that are huge fans of mm-hmm. these types of movies. But I appreciated it because it was something different. It wasn't Guy Ritchie, you know, and whatever that was. But no, I'm an A-. I'm the exact same. I wouldn't be shocked if this even went up, like you said. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely going to watch it again at some point in my life. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of people are going to be looking for that kind of, like, you know, action adventure mm-hmm. type of thing, and not all epic stories have to involve that kind of thing.
So. And I don't want to, but the thing is, I mean, the movie kind of has both. I mean, I don't want to sway people that are like, oh, there's no action, or I mean, there is stuff. I mean, there is definitely he fights and things happen, and there's exciting moments, but it's mm-hmm. just it has a lot more quiet moments, I guess, than. Than most of these films do, but there's definitely, there's stuff going on. There's witches and, people on the trails that are stopping him and, trying to rob him. And I mean, there's all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff, but, there's a big ass green knight.
Yes, there is. Yeah. It's in the title. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get on to, spoilers here. Cause, I think this is one of those movies that sort of demand you talk about it in these terms.
No spoilers!
Kevin Spacey is Kaiser Soze.
Luke's what? Father is actually Darth Vader. What? She's the sister and the daughter.
No. I'm reading the books.
What I really enjoyed about this movie and what it spoke to me, and I don't know how many other people are getting this kind of interpretation, but to me it was telling me that there's a price for glory, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There is, and if you make a different kind of decision, you'll have to live with whatever consequences come from it. In this one, the Green Knight comes into is it where the Round Table is when he comes? Is it
I'm not sure. I mean, they're like in a banquet hall or something. I mean, they're having their banquet. So
And this mysterious Green Knight comes in and mm-hmm. basically tells Gawain that, you can hit me anywhere you want to. And then in a year from now, I will give you the same hit from a sword. And it means mm-hmm. anything. Lop mm-hmm. off the head. You could hit a shoulder. You could do a whole bunch of different things. Now, in Gawain's point of view, if a guy is giving you this kind of a chance, and Green Knight has just he's thrown his axe away. Mm-hmm. He's just leaning. He's like, whatever you want to do, just do it. In Gawain's shoes, you could do a nick. You could do a nick if you wanted to and be perfectly fine. And I think that's a perfectly fine path to go down, but you're also going to be possibly, the joke of all the knights or whatever. You could mm-hmm. People will be like, he had this chance to really hurt that guy, and you just gave him a little nick. That's really stupid, and instead he lops this dude's head off, I guess figuring, well, if I lop this dude's head off, he's not going to be able to come back and do the same thing to me, so let's just go on with it. And of course he lops the head off, and Green Knight takes his head, goes and picks up his head and like laughs as he runs mm-hmm. out of the town holding his head. All before this, we've been told that Gawain has really sort of, I don't know, wasted his life, but it's hinted that he hasn't done much in his life.
Yeah.
When Arthur calls him up and very, very statesmanly says, I want to talk to you, and you've never been by my side during dinner, and that's not your fault, that's mm-hmm. mine. It maybe the king's not saying this, but it's the movie telling us this.
Yeah.
That Gawain hasn't done a lot of things. The reason why he hasn't ever been sitting by his side, by Arthur's side, is because he hasn't done much in mm-hmm. his life. And his mom is even pushing him into all this. I will never know how to spell her, pronounce her name. It's Sarita Chaudhry is playing his mom. She's even trying to get him to go out there and do something with his life, and it's shown sort of that she is kind of the person putting all these things into motion at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
She's a witch maybe or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's what they say. A lot of the villagers think she's a witch. I don't feel like the movie ever just comes out and says it, but of course, I mean, you might be about to talk about that. She makes that garment for him.
Yeah.
That's supposed to protect him.
She makes a garment for him that's supposed to protect him, but she also, during the banquet, is like doing this sort of seance or ceremony type thing. That's when the Green Knight shows up. It's almost like she's summoning him to come and And so after he cuts off this guy's head, he is a hero in this town. He's like, everybody knows who he is. He's got a year, but I think it's for a year, he sort of wastes that year. It shows him drinking. He's still, mm-hmm. his girlfriend is a prostitute. Alicia Vikander plays his, I guess, girlfriend, but there it's implied that, you know, he's never going to go any further than what they've been doing.
Correct. Yeah.
So like he has this full year of glory basically, but he has to pay the consequences for what he does. He could have just given this guy a nick. He wouldn't have gotten that glory he wouldn't have gotten any glory. He wouldn't have had any consequences for it. Well, the consequences for not doing what he did is that he's just still this regular dude at a castle.
Mm-hmm.
He never has that fame that he has. And once that year comes around, the king comes to him and says, yeah, well, it's been a year now. Now you're going to have to go back to the Green Knight and you're going to have to get your you're going to have to pay for this glory that you just bought, basically.
Yeah.
What he's saying. And all throughout this quest where he is trying to find the Green Knight, he is being dissuaded from basically going to the Green Knight, even though in the first one, Barry Keoghan is tricking him into going into this woods. Yeah. Barry Keoghan's great in his small like section here.
Yeah. I was trying to remember what I'd seen him in recently. And we had actually watched that movie with him. I don't remember what the actual title was when we interviewed, Neem Algar, but it's called Calm with Horses. Now it wasn't called that at the time. And,
But he's great at it, and so it seems like everything that he goes to is a diversion from his actual quest.
Mm-hmm.
And he's willing to do this. Like, I don't think when Barry Keoghan says you can find a chapel over here in the woods, like the Green Knight told him that it was a 6-night ride to the place where he lives. So when Barry Keoghan tells him there's a chapel over in these woods and he goes and does it, it's yet another way of him sort of delaying the inevitable during all of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
When
for sure.
When the next one, when the woman, he lies down in that house and the woman comes up to him and says, my head has been thrown into this pond or whatever. Would you go find it? He goes and does that quest. And then he runs into Joel Edgerton later on. And then there's another character played by Alicia Vikander in that scene. You know, he again diverts himself. The movie's very, very good about saying that if he ever diverts to the point where he doesn't finish this quest, we see by the end of it the consequences of that, even because when he comes back after that ending, that first ending.
Yeah,
where he evades the Green Knight, he finds his horse, he rides back, he becomes king, and then his reign is sort of fought. You know, he has to fight a bunch of wars, and then he pulls off his sash, and his head falls off. By the end of it.
Yeah, and he loses. He loses everything he loves too, right? Because he gets Alicia Vikander pregnant, and then but he can't be with her because he's king. So
right.
You know,
and
there's
he marries this other woman who's got a better station in life.
So he's miserable. Basically,
he's miserable, and it shows that there's no way that you can get around any of this. Or, you know, you have to face your consequences. So that's one of the things that that's the thing that I loved about this movie. And then, you know, of course, it ends in some sort of ambiguity where he pulls off we're back to where we were. We've been, what do you want to call it? La La Land or Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2, where they had
where they showed what could happen.
Yeah. And he's back where the Green Knight is. And he finally, he decides, you know what? I had my year where I could have just made something of my life. Instead, I drank and, I feel like he did waste that year that he had all that glory. And so he's like, I've done everything that I can do. There's the alternative to this is living a miserable life. All right, I'm going to pull this sash off. And then the Green Knight in the very final line, he says, "Oh, that's very noble of you, Sir Knight," or whatever. "Now off with your head." And
yeah, well, he tells him, he says, "You passed the test," or whatever. It's like what he says, or "You passed the quest," or whatever. Like, you did what you were supposed to do. So then you kind of think for a second, all is well. Yeah, that's an all-timer final line, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
But it's like, "Off with your head." And that is, that's the guy from The Witch. Oh, yeah, Ralph Ineson.
Ralph Ineson, who's got that deep voice.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's actually... I couldn't figure out, because the Green Knight is really cool. Like, I like how they did the Green Knight, but it was hard to tell. Was that him in that in that costume? Like, I couldn't, you know, I don't know. It's definitely his voice, regardless.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I have no idea. I'm assuming that was a CGI character and they voiced it, but... I have no idea, but anyway, what did you pull out of this movie that you really wanted to?
I mean, I think we're pretty much on the same page. The I was a little, the Alicia is it I always say is it Alicia Vikander?
Alicia Vikander.
Alicia Vikander, who obviously is amazing. I was kind of confused as to, I didn't mind her playing two roles. I mean, the more of her in a movie, I'm good. But I didn't know if it probably was intentional in some way, but I didn't really know what it was, other than maybe it was his way, because he doesn't like bring attention to the fact that she looks just like her. He does kind of look at her weird.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's just, you know, he's the Joel Edgerton and her character. I guess they're married and they're very odd ducks. And he basically, he stays at their castle because it's right by where the Green Knight is. So he stays there for a couple days. Mm-hmm. And God, Joel Edgerton, that scene where he's talking about a hawk eating a horse. Is that what it is? Like, he says a hawk came down one day and ate a horse.
I actually don't remember.
And it was a hawk came down and ate something that was big. I think it was a horse, but then he said, and he just goes, it was terrible. And then he was like, but everyone should see that once in their life.
I remember that line.
It was just, he's so good. So that part, that little bit, you know, as amusing as it was, I wasn't sure what exactly all that was really supposed to say. Cause there's that whole bit too, where the Vikander character pretends that she made the sash.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
And then I guess, like, I don't know if she jerks him off or if she has him jerk himself off. I was going to get confused.
Man, I tell you what, that scene, I had no idea what I was looking at. I really did. I felt like I was a 5-year-old kid watching that thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, it looks like they're getting it on. And then, like, there's that brief shot of like some foamy substance, and
I was on, like, his hand.
Yeah. Is that really where we went there? It's kind of strange that it went there, because it doesn't seem like that kind of movie.
No, it doesn't, and that definitely took me out of the movie for a second. Like, if I had any, like, I don't know if it's even really a negative, but if I had any parts of the movie where I was kind of not as into it, but it's weird because I enjoyed those characters. I was amused by a lot of the stuff that happened in those 15 minutes, but it did kind of take me out of the movie a little bit, especially in that scene. The scene, though, where he goes and does the quest to find the woman's head, that's Aaron Kellyman, who is, most people probably recently saw in Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. She's really good in her little brief stint. That's a really amusing part. And I felt like that felt more attached to the movie itself, as opposed to his little side quest with Edgerton, and which wasn't even a quest. I mean, I don't think he accomplished anything there, except I guess he came on his hand. That's about the only thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like I said, there's that whole bit where she's like, you know, I made this sash for you, even though he knows that she didn't. And I was very confused by all that. I didn't really know what I was supposed to get out of that, but everything else. Yeah, no, I think it's exactly what you're saying. It's all about, it's like, he's kind of like the, he kind of feels like he's the quarterback that, like, won the game at the last second. And he's got, like, that year of glory, like, until the next season starts, basically.
Exactly.
Like, he's like the pride of the small, you know, Texas town or whatever. And, you know, he drinks for free everywhere. And he, retells his story to everyone. And then at some point, it's just, if he stays there, it's just, he's going to be like 20 years from now telling that same story.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of what drives him. Cause it's really weird. Like, I mean, the idea of you just being like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and go and get killed. Like, that just seems so weird. But like, but his life in his little village doesn't seem any better, to be honest. You know, at least this way he has a chance. He can have an adventure. He can try to maybe it'll end up being something different. And it kind of feels like even at the end, even though I guess we're supposed to assume he does get killed. I mean, they do leave that open.
Yeah.
It's the movie is still saying that was the right choice, which I find fascinating. And I think I think I agree with the movie that was the right choice. So which is just kind of weird.
The question is the right choice to cut the guy's head off?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Giving you a chance. I'm saying that's one of the choices that he.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I know what you're saying. I'm agreeing.
To me, I was sitting there just thinking, man, what an interesting concept, because people will by and large forget that he has a choice to just nick the guy. And if he just nicks the guy, he still has to go do his quest. He might have even more glory by just doing that, because he may have to spend a year with people laughing at him and everything. But then a year later, when he goes to face the Green Knight, he's going to get a nick, but he can tell whatever story he wants when he comes back.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like,
I survived the Green Knight. You know, what do you want me to do? I mean, it's an interesting dynamic. He has this, when Arthur tells him, although I'm not sure if they actually name him as Arthur, even though we're supposed to believe that it's him, says, you know, what do you see out here in this banquet, pointing to all the great and everything. And he's like, legends and everything. And when he asks him to tell a story, he doesn't have a story.
Yeah.
So he is driven by that. And we've talked about that. We've covered all that. He just doesn't have anything. And he's driven by all that, that need for the glory and everything. He got it. And I feel like in the movie saying he wasted it, because by the time the year, it says a quick year later or something like that on the screen. You just see him just doing the same old stuff, only this time he's a legend in that town and everything. So it's one of those movies that I love. I can't wait to see this again, because I think I'm going to just keep appreciating it and appreciating it more. There is something about the way it's done. Like I said, it's just a completely realized thing. You feel like the director knows exactly what he wants on screen, and he got it. So I'm looking forward to seeing it more.
Yeah. And from a storytelling standpoint, for anyone like us, it's had like screenplay writing classes and stuff, you know, or courses or read books, you know, Lowry is breaking like all the rules about like how you write a protagonist, because he's not a very interesting protagonist, because like what you're saying and what I'm saying, I mean, he makes terrible choices and he gets himself in these situations, you know, like you said, he has to die at the end because of something, you know, a decision he made early on. But I find that more fascinating. Like, this is a lot more interesting to me than just the guy that, you know, always knows the right thing to do. And, you know,
a truly flawed hero.
Yeah. Yeah. And or, you know, and then you question, is he even a hero? Like, is there anything he really does that, you know, I mean, because he almost gets killed early on by the thieves and stuff. And and then I guess he finds that woman, her head. I don't know. It's a really interesting journey that you don't get this kind of protagonist a lot in movies. And so I appreciate that Lowry's kind of like, and I know some of this is probably from the poem itself, but I have to feel like he's taken a lot of liberties. Based on the stuff I've read, he took a lot of liberties.
I think so. I think
the general bare
bones idea.
Yeah. There's also the interesting part which I went and saw it with our friend Dave, and I guess he had read the poem, and he did say, because there's the one part where the Joel Edgerton character kisses Gawain.
Yeah.
And almost just to kind of be like, hey, maybe this will work. And, you know, Gawain's confused, and then they don't do anything else after that. But Dave said that was actually part of it. There is something in the poem in regards to that incident. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I thought that was really fascinating.
I also like, there's just, it's kind of an interlude in the movie where, and you see a piece of it in the trailer when he runs into those giants walking.
Yeah.
At first he's asking them if they could take him to.
Like, can I ride on your shoulder or something? Isn't that kind of what he's saying? Yeah.
Yeah. Again, looking for a shortcut. That's just such a surreal, dreamlike, beautiful scene in there. By this point, he has the talking fox by his side, and the fox is able to communicate to the giants, you know, what's going on and everything. But, I love stuff like that. I don't know. It's in some movies you'll see stuff like this and you're like, oh, this is just a waste of time. It seems like the director's just trying to be arty or weird or something like that. But this actually sort of fits into the whole quest and how Gawain approaches it and everything. It's just a nice.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Scenes like that and the fox. I mean, I guess there's a way because the fox talks to him with his mother's voice there toward the end. So I guess you could say, well, the mother is a witch and she's somehow embodying this. I don't know. She's doing something to be able to communicate with him. But but you could also say this is supposed to be him telling the story to Arthur or, you know, to the banquet. And, you know, this is just, we're just hearing the story. We're watching the story unfold and none of this really happened. I mean, I think you could read it a few different ways.
Yeah,
I feel like with the end, I mean, for me personally, I feel like all this happened for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does probably die at the end.
There was an article I read, that was, I think it was pieces of their own interpretation. They talked to David Lowery. They read the poem. They did all these things. And one of the things that they talked about was that how it seems like his mother is involved in everything.
Yeah.
In this whole thing. She's the one who summons the Green Knight or whatever she does because it's obviously connected. Whatever she's doing is bringing this Green Knight.
Yeah. I either missed that or I forgot that. But when you brought it up, I remembered that it was cutting to her like doing something. And then, cause I don't even think she was at the banquet, right? Or she showed up later. Yeah.
No, she wasn't not. There. She's at in another place. And, and she's already told her son, I want to see you do something with your life.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, so she's sort of, she's sort of setting things into motion, which might be the definition of protagonist in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It might be the very definition of protagonist. And then, you know, hearing his mother's voice in the fox and, the fox is sort of leading the way and by the end of it is telling him, don't go farther than you have. Cause there's a point where they hit that river and he's going to take that boat and the fox says, don't go any further. There's only death this way. Once again, sort of, it's almost like she has a change of heart. If the mom is behind everything, they talked about how it's hard to figure out how she is, if she's sort of directing a lot of things. How do we interpret that scene with Alicia Vikander later when she jerks him off or whatever and all this? If the mom is truly inside embodied in these characters, what is she actually?
That's interesting.
I can't remember. I wish I could credit that article. I think it was. I want to say it was like Variety or something that wrote that article, but it may not be, but,
that's cool.
If you look through, interpretations of this movie, you should find it somewhere at the top of your, queue when you write it in a search field, but yeah, and this movie fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And I think the multiple interpretations you could have, I think make this movie so much more interesting than a lot of the stuff we've seen this year. And, you know, for some people, I guess it will come off as pretentious. And I guess some people just want, a straightforward story, and that's fine. I can't explain why this isn't pretentious, because obviously in some people's hands it would 100% be. I mean, we've seen movies that go for it in this way and totally fail. Even by great directors like Lynch, or, you know, somebody who might mess in this kind of realm.
I think sometimes they dabble too much in the interpretation, and they just like, I'd like to do this cool scene where I do this and that, and it'll mean something to some people. And for me, I'm watching it going, yeah. You were going for something there. I didn't get it.
Yeah. And so I think it's just one of those things. I think Aaron says a lot of the time, you know, he doesn't vibe with something. And I think that's what this is going to come down to, whether you kind of vibe with it or not. We obviously did. Mm-hmm. I hope a lot of other people discover it and do too. I mean, I'm assuming if you're listening at this point, you've seen it, but I don't know. If you haven't, I still recommend it. Just to find out if you like it or not. I mean, it's one of those movies. Like even if I didn't like it or didn't vibe with it, I think I'd still recommend it, because I just, I know that it's going to hit so many people the right way. I'm not shocked that this is one of those where on Rotten Tomatoes, it's, you know, the critics are pretty high, users are pretty low. Although I will say, if you look at it's like a 53 for the users, but if you look at the average rating, it's not bad. It's like a little over 3 out of 5, which, you know, that's actually pretty good. Maybe it's not in whatever Rotten Tomatoes data is. I don't know. But to me, that seems higher than, it's not like people are just, you know, dogging this.
A lot of these A24s are like that, right?
Yeah.
They have this way about them. There's a trailer. What was the trailer that you sent the other day?
Oh, Lamb.
Lamb. Yeah. Like I wrote back saying you didn't even have to put A24 in the trailer, because you know it's A24. It's almost like all the same directors are directing these type of movies, where there's a I don't know, a slowness, stillness to it. There's a way it looks. These Midsummer, the Vovich movies, Hereditary. All these movies have that kind of feel.
The Vovich is the witch is the one that I kept thinking about with this movie, but I don't know if that's just because there was potential witchcraft. We had a couple of actors, because the queen, which I guess is supposed to be Guinevere, it's Katie Dickey. So her, you know, she's in it. And then, like we already said, that Ralph Ineson, you know, plays the Green Knight. So that could have been part of it. But it kind of had that feel, because I don't think David Lowery is a very different director than Robert Eggers. I don't want people to think I'm
right.
Saying
no, similar. People aren't the same or anything. That under A24, they present these movies in a way that just feels, you know, it's got this, there's a brand to it. Mm-hmm. And A24 must be seeing some pretty good return on this investment, because all of their movies, I feel like, have the same critic rating and then user rating afterwards. I don't know if it's something where people are constantly going, oh, that looks good, and then they get disappointed. Or if there's a lot of people who are going in, enough people are going in and liking what they see, that they're still able to make these kind of movies.
Yeah, because I feel like I kind of thought, was it Annapurna? Was that the one that I guess they're still around, but I don't know. They didn't quite, even though they got Oscars and stuff like that. I don't know. I feel like they kind of backed off a little bit from what they were doing. But A24, they're just sticking to it. And they don't spend that much money, so I guess they make enough. But And some of these movies, I guess, make a little bit of money. I mean, Hereditary did okay. I think The Witch did pretty well. And they also, they're not afraid of releasing these like in the middle of the summer either. That's the other crazy thing. Like, they'll put these up against like Fast and Furious and stuff. And maybe that's smart.
It feels like it's working, but I wouldn't be shocked if A24 said, oh, okay, now we need to start switching gears at some point. Yeah. If this user thing keeps happening, because eventually people are going to be like, okay, I've seen all these movies that look like that and I didn't like it, and they're just not going to come anymore. I mean, in this movie, we're talking about it like it's a huge, huge blockbuster. I don't think A24 is looking for a huge, huge blockbuster. They spent $15 million, according to what we can see, and they made $7 million this week. And I'm sure that they'll make that sort of that fifth. They got to make about $30 million to get that get their whole investment back.
But, yeah, and I feel like those movies have legs too. Like they you know, people are still talking about Midsommar and Hereditary and The Witch and stuff. I think those movies have done pretty well VOD and, you know, mm-hmm. physical sales and stuff like yeah. that. Like better than not maybe not like outstanding, but better than you would think. Because I mean, a lot of those A24 movies, like I said, people still talk about them today. At least the people I talk to. I mean, maybe it's not like average, but maybe it's not mainstream. But it seems like there's enough interest, so I like it. I hope they get to keep making them. I'm looking forward to Lamb. I mean, that looks like another swing. So we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. And what you're saying, you know, wish they could keep making these is something that we're basing on a lot of studios that have come out. They've come out swinging, man. They have these great movies at first, and then something happens where either they're not making, they're getting critical acclaim, but they're not getting the money that they need to keep on going. I remember Focus Features was one of these at one point. Universal ended up buying Focus Features. I don't know how Focus does these days. I don't see them as much as I used to. But Focus used to be back in the early 2000s, I believe it was. I think it was Lost in Translation was one of the first ones.
Oh, yeah. Like everything they released got some kind of nomination.
Yeah, they were huge. And what else was out? You mentioned Annapurna, which I think was one trying to do what A24 is doing right now. And I've seen them sparingly over the years. They're more in line to be doing a movie with another studio these days.
Exactly.
I think to break down costs. But yeah, this is one of those things where it's like, God, I hope they just keep on making these kind of movies, because we need these kind of different movies in here. That we can't let everything be comic books and Fast and Furious movies. We loved The Green Knight. What did you guys think of it? Go to Sincast presented by CinemaSins on Facebook. We're also on CinemaSins Twitter, Music Video Sins Twitter, Discord, and SoundCloud. Jonathan, where can people reach you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at SamLoomis13. I'm also on Letterboxd. If you just look up my name, Jonathan Watkins, and I do a podcast every week with Aaron Dicer and Danae Hughes called Behind the Sins. So check it out.
All right. That's going to do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkinson and Jonathan Watkins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
No. And that was another thing. Just watching Dev Patel in this was fascinating too, because like I kind of made the comment that I feel like he's like a movie star, and it's like I don't know what movie stars are anymore, because that's just not really what it was. You know, there was a whole thing going on social media the other day, I think mostly on Twitter, where somebody tweeted, you know, Robert Downey Jr. didn't have to play Iron Man. It could have been somebody else. And it could have still been a hit. And then a bunch of people, of course, were saying, no, that's not true. But then but you think about it, you're like, if they had cast like John Cusack, I mean, are you saying that wouldn't have been a hit? Like, I don't know that I think it might have worked. You know, it's
also think about, I think a lot of people a lot of people who say Robert Downey Jr. is the only one. First off, almost every movie's like this. You can't imagine other people in the roles that they played that made them iconic and everything. But if you go back to 2008, Robert Downey Jr., hardly anybody casual fan of movies of a certain age knew who he was. If you in the 90s, if you went through the 90s, you know, he was in all these. You know, he was a great actor. He was a great actor, but he had so many problems with, you know, his personal life that he sort of started to fade there towards the end of the 90s. And he hadn't done anything big up until Iron Man, I don't think. He may have done something like, I mean, he was in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but that wasn't like a big huge hit.
No, I mean, no, he had done nothing on the level of Iron Man, what that became. I mean, obviously they didn't know it was going to be that kind of hit, but
so
yeah.
So if you got anybody who was like, if you got anybody who was kind of, you know, had any kind of, what would you say with the pizzazz that Robert Downey Jr. adds to that role or anything, if you got anybody, imagine if it was like Ryan Reynolds or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine how that would have changed a lot of things.
Yeah, I think I was thinking Cusack, because I was that around that time, like Cusack was probably kind of one of those that was not falling out of favor, but wasn't as well known as he used to be.
Definitely.
Like I don't know, like James Spader, you know, who's also kind of like Robert Downey Jr. Like he's got like, you know, that smart aleck wit and everything, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's like, but then you even think back earlier than that. If you think like, you know, if Tom Selleck had played Indiana Jones, would that not have been a hit? I think it still probably would have been a hit. I think so.
You would have still had Spielberg doing the doing the movie, and Selleck, especially back in those days. Holy crap.
Yeah, we're not saying like David Hasselhoff. I mean, you know, Tom Selleck actually is you know, like a decent actor. Like he's fine, you know. I don't know. It's interesting. So it's interesting seeing like these kind of more star vehicles like this, like what this does for Dev Patel. Cause I think if we do see that, it's more on television now. I think television is where a lot of that star power lies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think you get that kind of cred in the movies anymore. You know, people are, actors are trying to just get paid, as we've seen recently with like, you know, Scarlett Johansson and possibly Emma Stone, you know, all this stuff coming out where they're not getting what they were supposed to get. And, you know, but then on TV, you've got like Angela Bassett. There was just an article today that like Angela Bassett's going to be the highest paid, I think, actor of color ever on television.
Really?
That is her in 9-1-1, isn't it? I think that's right. All of a sudden, that's sounding wrong to me.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. So it's just different. So when it's Angela Bassett. So when I see, when I see movies like this, it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of nice. It feels like something, you know, even though it's a strange movie, it's not like a mainstream thing, but it still feels like more of a vehicle for an actor, which is interesting because you just don't really get those anymore, I don't think. Not like you used to.
Yeah, there's no, I don't think there's any such thing as a movie star as mm-hmm. back at what we're, you know, I think we hit the end of that in the Matt Damon, Brad Pitt, George Clooney, Leonardo DiCaprio era. Now we will still probably be sold on a DiCaprio movie here and there. I don't know how much. A lot of times though, the movie has to look good though. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people get this idea that, well, Leonardo DiCaprio drives people to the theaters, but he has to be in a movie that looks good or else it's not going to be something that, I don't know how that worked back in the old days where the real movie star era was and everything, where you had Cary Grant and Jimmy mm-hmm. Stewart and all these people. Did they alone bring people to the seats, and it was, they could have gone to any piece of crap that they were they weren't in many pieces of crap.
I know what you're saying.
Did they get people in the seats? Maybe they did, even for really crappy movies back in the day. I don't know.
But even like in the 90s, you know, Tom Cruise, some of this will probably be an outtakes, but even in the 90s, Tom Cruise had that crazy streak where he had like 8 movies in a row that were like in, I don't know, over $100 million.
I'm not sure if it was 8
or
it,
6,
but there were a lot. He and Robin Williams both had a number of movies in a row that hit $100 million mark. And I think it was Cruise started with The Firm, and then it ended when he did Eyes Wide Shut. Let me go back to where he was here. So The Firm, Interview with the Vampire, Mission Impossible, Jerry Maguire. And then I think it ended with Eyes Wide Shut. So A Few Good Men did come out after Far and Away. So it would be in this streak. But Far and Away is the only blemish, I believe. Days of Thunder, I think.
Oh, that made money.
Days of Thunder was up there. I don't know. I don't think Born on the 4th of July was a huge.
No, that got him an Oscar nomination, though. So that was kind of what it did. Rain Man was obviously huge. So he had a
Rain Man was number one movie of 88, I believe. Born on the 4th of July was a decent hit.
And even if you look at something like Far and Away or Eyes Wide Shut, they probably made more money than they would have made, you know, without him in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that was definitely the drive. I mean, I think Kubrick, you know, Kubrick dying and all the stories behind that film probably got it some views as well. But I definitely think that because you have like, what, 3 years he doesn't even do a movie because he was filming that or something. There's like a huge, and then after that, he does like Magnolia and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Robin Williams had a similar one. This is, I'm going to go through its sort of its thing here.
I bet Tom Hanks did too.
Yeah, sure. For sure. With Robin Williams, it's kind of weird because he was in so many other little things that you would have to go with, you'd have to go with where he was the main star of it. But
Good Morning Vietnam was a hit, right?
Yeah, but this was in the 90s. Because he had, I think, The Birdcage. Then he had, and, well, this is going backwards. The Birdcage, Jumanji. Then there was Mrs. Doubtfire. Toys didn't do well. Aladdin was a big one, and Hook. And it may have been one of these stories where, one of these streaks where they were the only stars in the 90s to have this many $100 million.
Yeah, that's probably because that was
may have not have been in
common.
A row.
Yeah. Because that's crazy to think back when you had like a top 10 and movies at the bottom of the top 10 made like $80 million or even like $50 million. You know, if you go back to like the '80s, and now it's like, you know, the number 10 is like $500 million. I mean, box office makes no sense anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyways, well, we got off on a sidetrack.
That'll be a lot of outtakes for sure. We don't do outtakes mainly on mini pods very often, but we're going to have them this time.
It's a good conversation.